I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast. Today is a huge day for the podcast.
Major.
Eric and I are back in the studio together.
Gazing into each other's eyes at this very moment.
Producer Britt.
Producer Britt, who really took a lot on today to get everything set up because we are in a makeshift studio. There's still a lot of protocols here in 30 Rock. So we are up on a different floor, shoved in the corner of a different conference room, but we are together and that's what matters.
It's so weird. It's been over a year.
Yeah, it's been over a year since we've all been together. I know, Megan, you are very excited about the commissary and getting some food on the ninth floor because that is open for business, which is exciting. So it's like old times, but new times.
Right. Thank you guys, by the way. I mean, I do feel like it's a good moment to take a beat and say thank you to everyone who has really stuck with us through this time, us no longer recording on like studio equipment. You know, we're doing the best that we can in our apartments, me in my closet. I'm sure the audio has been weird at times and mismatched maybe. And we just so appreciate you guys kind of sticking through this pandemic with us.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys have heard some background noises, cats, dogs, hammers, doors closing, who knows? But yeah, thank you for sticking with us, and we are so excited to be back. Today is also Juneteenth, which is America's other Independence Day. So while it's a day to celebrate freedom and recognize how far we have come, we should also take a moment to think about the continued work that we need to do in the fight for equality, because Black lives matter.
Also wanted to remind you guys that we released a bonus episode with Keeping Up with the Kardashians executive producer Farnaz Ferjam. She's worked on the show since the beginning and with the series finale and first ever reunion episodes currently airing, which by the way are hosted by Andy Cohen. We had to chat with her about all things Kardashian, and you know that that is my other lifelong passion, so go check it out. It's a really good interview.
Can you share one juicy tidbit from that interview?
I asked her who was the easiest of the sisters to work with and who was the hardest.
Oh, and she answered truthfully.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, were you surprised by her answer?
No.
Interesting. Okay, so what are we talking about today? What's going on in the Bravo world?
Well, we need to talk about Shaws of Sunset, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and Real Housewives of New York City.
Oh my God.
And then, you know, wrap things up with Rose and Thorne.
Obviously. Plus, we have an interview coming up with Amrit Kapai from Family Karma.
Well, breaking news. We're not in the studio when we found out, so we're picking this up from our homes. Real Housewives of Orange County, huge casting news.
Oh my God. Heather Dubrow is returning next season.
Kelly Dodd, Bronwyn Wyndham Burke, and Elizabeth Vargas not coming back.
Shannon Bedore, Gina Kirshenhider, and Emily Simpson will be returning. Are we surprised by this shakeup?
I am now looking back at all of this Heather in the news stuff, and I guess I'm just curious, which informs what? Mm-hmm. Did execs at Bravo start, you know, sort of teasing out, so like putting out little feelers about it to get people talking about Heather? Or did people talking about Heather make Bravo execs think, huh?
Right. Well, it's interesting, too, because with Kelly's departure, Heather's return, if we think about when Heather left OC, she and Kelly were really butting heads. So it's almost a shady casting choice that I'm kind of happy about.
I'm really excited. It's especially because right now I've been watching the Heather Dubrow seasons. So you forget like how funny she was, and you know, she was involved in a lot of drama. It was good.
And she is rich.
Yeah, she's fancy pants.
Do you know who's thrilled about Heather Dubrow's return?
Who?
My mom.
Oh, is she?
Yes. She was the first person I texted when I heard the news.
But what is Heather going to think of Gina? You know?
That will definitely be an interesting relationship.
Because Gina is not fancy, you know?
No. Gina's going to have to step up her hair game, I think, in front of Heather. That's for sure.
I'm really, really excited.
Shaz?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say that I feel like Gigi living with her mom should be its own spinoff series.
100%.
The fact that her mom had moved in basically during the pandemic to help care for Elijah, but then has not left. And just knowing Gigi's short temper and like the way that they are together, I just feel like I need to see more of that.
Well, I remember last season, the flashback scene that they showed of them driving in the car. That was my rose that week because I just loved their ridiculous interaction, their antics. They would be great on a show together.
Oh, would love.
Maybe a digital series.
Ooh.
I'll pitch it.
Okay, so this whole Mike texting, but then someone spoof texting, it's now taken a turn where Mike is convinced that Reza actually spoofed the texts and brought up Gigi as a way of covering.
And Reza is claiming that he never said Gigi, but Mike was the one on the phone call to say it was Golnessa who did it.
Right.
And so apparently there's this spiritual advisor as well who is saying everyone believes they're correct. Like, it's not necessarily that someone said, oh, it was Gigi, or no, it wasn't Gigi, but everyone somehow believes that they're the right person?
Mike has exaggerated it. And that's where you're at, where everyone feels like they're telling the truth.
I think it's either one of two things. I think Mike is either making up this whole thing to sort of get heat off of him.
Right.
Or that it was a conversation. We don't know who said what, but either way, it wasn't necessarily vindictive. It was just a, well, it could be Gigi.
I feel like that's what happened. I think Reza, on a phone call with Mike, said, maybe it was Gigi, and almost thought of it as a throwaway comment and didn't really think it would go further than that. And when Mike brought it up in Palm Springs, Reza was like, hold up, I never said it was Gigi. I said, maybe it was Gigi, which is a difference.
Although he didn't say that, did he?
No, he didn't say that, but maybe in his head, that's how he was playing it. But I thought Gigi would be a little bit more upset with Reza when she went to his house with Destiny. She was sort of like, well, you just ditched us. It was kind of rude for you to do that. We all should have left together and gotten a hotel together. And then it did kind of come across like maybe Gigi was more involved than I originally thought she was.
You know what my read of the situation is in terms of how she's reacting to him? I just think she's so beyond ever trusting this group, you know, particularly MJ and Reza, that I think she's no longer invested. So even if Reza did say it, she's like, all right. You know, it's no longer at that place of, I thought we were friends, because she's been burned too many times.
And she's not in a place in her life where she's going to lash out anymore, but maybe she'll just start to retreat and she'll show up for filming. She'll do the group stuff that she has to do. She'll invite them to, you know, the jungle party for her baby, but
she's no longer going to invest.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think you're right. Okay, so should we talk about the jungle party?
Yes, please. The welcoming party.
The welcoming party. Okay, number one, Adam's castaway beard. It's got to go.
What is with these men who have taken the pandemic as a sign that they should just grow out long facial hair?
I don't know. And it's becoming on some people. I think you need a certain look, a certain personality to pull it off. Because if you care for it in the right way, it looks kind of cool. I don't think that's what Adam is doing, though.
No.
I think especially towards the end of the episode when you see him kind of stroking it while everybody's fighting, I'm like, no, this has got to go. Because also Reza is so much more put together, and I just, that contrast is just, it's not working for me.
How did you go crazy with your facial hair at any point?
I can't go crazy with my facial hair. This is about what you see now.
Yeah, it's a little scruffy.
It's a little scruffy, but it gets patchy. It just doesn't grow in.
Yeah.
I think I'm lacking on some testosterone or something.
Oh my God, Eric, I love your hair.
Well, thank you.
I didn't tell you.
Oh, thank you. I actually need a haircut, which is happening on Friday. So thank you anyway. Okay, so yeah, Adam's castaway beard's got to go. Number two, I think Adam and Reza both missed the jungle theme.
Right.
Wearing camo Fendi is not quite jungle. That's more army.
Right.
I don't know if Fendi's really army, but.
Well, I also didn't like that Mike wore a monkey costume. I mean, it's fine. It's just, you know, I don't know.
Well, it was interesting just to see everybody's different interpretation of their the different theme. Take. You know, MJ, I think, executed a great cheetah, jaguar look. Adam and Reza missed the mark. And Mike did his own thing, for sure. That had to be hot.
Okay, so Destiny walks in the party.
Oh.
And Vita, of course, has a comment and says that Destiny looks great, but she needs an ass.
You guys, just to keep it 100, because I was talking to her about it, Vita Ju was like, you look snatched, but you need an ass, girl.
Vita should not be commenting on a woman's body, period. No excuses.
Right.
Why would Reza go and tell Destiny that?
I do not know. I almost excuse Vita for saying it because it's on brand for her. It's part of her character.
Right. She's never going to change.
She's been so critical of MJ over the years at every step of the way that you almost expect that from her. And not that it makes her charming, but it's just one of those things you kind of eye roll and you're like, oh, that's Vita being Vita. But for Reza to take that bone straight to Destiny and position it like, oh, well, anytime somebody talks about one of my friends, I'm just going to let them know.
And I think that was such a bullshit excuse. I don't think
reach.
I also, like, based on the way he said it to Destiny, oh my God, Destiny, guess what Vita just said? I think he almost thought that she was going to be, to laugh maybe?
Right. What did he expect her reaction to be?
But the thing is, women, we're fragile. Like, the way we feel about ourselves and our bodies, especially right now, you know? Like, I keep hearing from my friends right before we go out to, like, as we're starting to venture out and do things, they're like, I'm really self-conscious about my body. And it's like, you're fine, okay? No one is noticing. Like, you're noticing it. So then for Destiny to have come and face that criticism about her body, which she can't do anything about it, right?
No.
Like, it's just rude, Reza. Like, if you really felt like you owed it to Destiny to tell her, which I don't think you did, you do it, you pull her to the side and say, I just want you to know this was said.
Well, right. And it's not like she had, like, toilet paper on her shoe. It's the way her butt looked in the dress, which she cannot change. And MJ's point of, why would you tell her this at the beginning of the party so that she can be self-conscious about it the whole time? That's not fair.
Yeah.
That was really out of line
for
Reza. And I don't think he understood the severity of it in the moment. I hope he does now.
You know, I think it could be a factor of, like, being on the show for so long. And he just, he is used to sort of poking and prodding to sort of get the drama started.
Right. I don't know. I just felt bad for Destiny in that moment. Now, after this happening and rewatching it this week on air, is she going to feel a type of way? Is she going to come back next season with butt implants or something because she's going to feel self-conscious about it? I hope that doesn't happen unless she's like, yeah, that is something I want to change and she feels empowered to do it. That's great, but don't do it just because you've received this unnecessary criticism from a man of all people.
Yeah. And, you know, I actually think that Destiny handled it the best way possible where, like, she said to Vita, I'm not bothered about it, so don't talk about it.
Yeah.
But then to pull Reza aside and be like, why would you do that? You know, I thought it was, like, good on her.
Do you think it was a problem for Reza to repeat something Vita specifically had said? Because MJ was saying, it's very disrespectful to do that to my mom. Now you're putting my mom in the middle of this drama, so to speak.
I guess a little, like, you know, the cameras add a different layer to it. But obviously, if you whispered something to me and then I said, guess what Eric just said?
Right.
You'd be like, what is your problem? Like, I said that to you and maybe I shouldn't have said it, but I said it to you. Why do you have to tell everybody?
Right.
And I think what MJ's more upset about is, like, you're now using my mom to start out an issue with Destiny and me. And, like, Destiny and I need to work on our stuff.
Yeah. Poor Destiny.
I know.
Well, by the end of this party, everyone sits down. We see Reza and Mike start to pop off at each other. There was something going on with Gigi at the same time. She was interjecting, but I don't think the cameras picked up as much of that, or at least they didn't include it in the editing. I'd be very curious to know what else Gigi was saying.
I hate when there's all those, like, conversations happening at once because you can only get one part of it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I wanted to know about the other part too.
Right. I mean, I would imagine she was probably telling everyone to calm down and stop ruining her son's party. But I think she's also been pretty good about mediating this season.
Yeah.
Especially between Mike and Reza and being in the middle of what's going on with Mike and Paulina. I mean, Gigi definitely has been a little bit the voice of reason so far this season. So I'd be curious to know what she was saying. But I don't know. This whole ending of the episode with this situation, I just don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what my point is.
Next episode looks amazing.
I mean, Halloween looks wild. Do things get physical? Between Destiny and Mike?
I know, right?
I don't give a f-. You guys are lame.
Jimmy, is that a threat?
Y'all are trying to bring up bullshit that's trying to affect my relationship.
Get out of my house.
Oh, you're touching me. You're
burned. Get the f- out of my motherfucking house.
So I got the chance to speak with Amrit Kapai from Family Karma a little bit about his relationship with Nicholas, when he's going to propose, how his parents are doing without Theo in the house anymore. Also, he talked a little bit about which Bravo celebrity he would set Anisha up with. The answer might surprise you. Here's that interview. All right, guys, we are here with a cast member from Family Karma, Bravo's not newest best show, but in my opinion, best show right now. We are here with Amrit Kapai. What's going on, Amrit?
Hey, hey, Eric. How's it going?
Good, good. It's so nice to talk to you. We didn't get to chat last season, so there's a lot to cover today. I hope you're ready.
I am. I prepared.
Okay, well, after watching this week's episode, do you feel prepared for a zombie apocalypse now that you know how to fire a shotgun?
Oh, I am always ready for a zombie apocalypse. Yeah, I got to be honest with you. When my dad suggested we go to the gun range, I was like, what exactly does that entail? Because again, I've never shot a gun. You know, as viewers saw, I've done laser tag. I've shot water guns. that's the extent of my shooter. I'm not a straight shooter. I guess I'm not even a gay shooter. I'm not a shooter generally.
I was pretty impressed. You seem to handle it pretty well. I feel like I would have been on my ass within like the first shot.
Yeah, that shotgun, there's a kick to it, especially when, you know, you don't know what to expect. You know it's going to be loud because you have to wear like the earmuffs, but you don't know like the power once you actually like shoot it. So yeah, it was an experience for sure.
Right. Well, I am coming down to Miami and posting up with you guys if the zombie apocalypse comes, so just be ready for that.
Exactly.
So we see this season you're living with Nicholas in that studio apartment, Theo as well. You know, all throughout the pandemic, what's one thing that Nicholas did that drove you absolutely crazy?
Oh, just one? Okay. One thing that he does that drives me crazy. He loves watching like those funny clips on Instagram. And listen, who doesn't? I love them too. Everyone does, right? That Instagram is to provide us memes and funny clips and we laugh. But he just, I don't find the ones that he watches very funny. And he'll sit there and like cackle out loud. Like, and we'll be sitting on the couch and I'll be right next to him. And I kind of, when I see a meme, I'll like smile to myself. I don't think I'm like laughing out loud. And maybe it's like once in a blue moon, I'm actually laughing out loud with him.
Right.
It's like every single clip he's seeing on Instagram, he is laughing out loud. I'm like, babe, well, you know, I'm like, can you keep your laughter to yourself? and then he'll be like, but look, it's so funny. And then he'll show it to me. And I'm like, this is not funny at all. And that like, that makes me even more annoyed with him because I'm like, you're laughing at something that's not funny.
Right. Oh, that's the worst.
It's funny for him, but it's just not funny for me. And I'm like, oh my God, babe.
I know.
Silently laugh. Please.
I know. I hate that when somebody shows you something and they're like, this is so funny. And then they play it for you and you're like, oh my God, now I have to laugh because they think it's funny, but I don't think it's funny.
And like, we have very different senses of humor. Like, he finds content that's like over the top in your face funny. He finds those to be hilarious. Whereas I'm very like, the dry humor.
Okay. Yeah.
So like things that aren't like meant to be funny, but he'll like stuff like, oh, this woman just like, tripped on something and fell down and he thinks that's hilarious, or this like man farted in the store and he thinks that's hilarious, but I'm like, that's not funny.
right You have a little more like maybe highbrow humor, he's a little more lowbrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, on the flip side, what's one thing that you do that drives him crazy?
Again, that's funny if I could pick one, because I probably have 100 things that drive him crazy. He definitely is way more like he's neater than I am. Like he needs everything put in place in a certain place. Like everything needs to be organized. And I'm just kind of like, I'm not as bothered. You know, I'm not a messy person, but I'm also not bothered. Like if the bed isn't made until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, whereas he needs a bed made first thing in the morning, or like the way I do the dishes, like I swear he takes a magnifying glass and like inspects the dishes after I do them, because I'm like, I did the dishes, they look fine. And he'll like find dirt on them. And he hates that. He thinks I'm lazy. And he thinks I only do tasks like halfway or like 70% of the way. And I don't do the full task. I'm like, babe. But again, I think in just my head, I'm not very bothered by 70% of the task, but he needs it done 100%, which is probably the right thing, you know? Like,
right.
If you're gonna do it, do it 100%.
That is, I mean, honestly, everything you're saying is exactly my relationship with my boyfriend living in our, you know, one bedroom apartment in Queens all through the pandemic. So you are not alone. I have to ask how your parents are doing without Theo around.
Oh, I mean, they're good. I mean, they miss him, and I know they miss him. I can't tell who misses him more, my dad or my mom. It actually might be very equal. It might be a tie. My parents are, you know, they're very spiritual, and viewers see that in the episodes. Like, they're very into spirituality.
Yeah.
And one of the basic, like, tenets of, like, their spirituality is, like, non-attachment. Like, you shouldn't be attached to people, to worldly things, because again, at the end of the day, we all sort of have to pass, you know, no one's going to live forever.
Yeah.
So they put up this whole, like, you know, we love Theo, but we're not attached to him because we shouldn't be attached to anything. But I'm like, oh, guys, I'm pretty sure you're attached to him. So
yeah, they seem pretty attached.
They're pretty attached, but I mean, we go there often. I mean, every weekend, if not, you know, every other weekend we're there, and I bring Theo everywhere. I mean, everywhere. So I make sure that they're still able to see him often, because I know they love just having him around.
Right, right. It's their grandchild. I mean, come on.
Exactly. The closest thing to one, at least for now.
Right, right. For now. Well, at this time, you are thinking about a potential proposal. So talk a little bit about what excites you about getting engaged and what terrifies you about it.
Oh, Eric, this is like therapy, I think.
We're getting deep.
I should be lying down on a couch right now talking to you. What excites me? I think there are a ton of things that excite me about, you know, spending the rest of my life with Nicholas, if it gets to that, right? But I think just the fact that we're moving forward and that we want to move forward, you know, the last thing you want to do is get sort of stagnant in a relationship and you're not progressing. You know, everyone has like this life that they've envisioned and this life that they've dreamed of. And you got to constantly be moving forward in that direction. And, you know, if there's a proposal down the road, I know that's going to be the right step in that direction, because it's just adding more layers to a relationship. And the more layers you add, the more committed you are to that person, and the harder it is to be like, you know what, I'm done, or I'm bored, or I found someone else, or whatever reason it may be, I'm walking away. Like you gotta continue to add layers to the relationship so that people are committed to one another, you know?
Yeah.
That deepens the connection. It deepens the connection. Exactly, Eric. It deepens the connection. One of the things I'm not terrified per se. I mean, I guess most people would say like, oh my God, I'm not single anymore, but I haven't been single in so long that I don't even know.
Right,
I don't even know what I would do if I was single. I honestly don't even know how I would date. Like, I hats off to Anisha for, you know, getting back in there and doing what she's doing, because I would be a confused mess if I had to start dating again. So that doesn't necessarily terrify me.
Yeah.
I guess like, I don't know. I mean, we have to see like how his parents are, you know, that's a little scary, like how much they're going to embrace it, how supportive they're going to be, you know, because this, you know, proposal kind of solidifies a relationship, you know, that's sort of the first indication of like, okay, this is going to be a forever thing.
Right.
So just how maybe the thing that terrifies me is the effect it's going to have on like the people that we're close to.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about a proposal is once you get engaged, then the questions start coming. Well, when's the wedding? What's next? What about children? You know, like every step you take, there's always something else that people are still expecting of you.
I know. It just makes it so complicated. Life is so easy when you're like 22 and you're like, I have no cares in the world. I have no responsibilities, no dependents. Yeah. So that's actually another terrifying thing is like, everything that follows after an engagement.
Right, right. Remember those days of being 22, carefree?
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Wednesday night, you're like, I'm just going to go for cocktails on a Wednesday because why not?
Right, right. Because I don't get hangovers at 22.
Yeah, sometimes I still do that, but only one cocktail.
Right, right. We got to limit ourselves now. Otherwise, it's 2 days of just like being ill.
Exactly.
Well, in this episode too, you get coffee with Richa, and she gets uncharacteristically emotional discussing the state of her relationship with Vishal. So what's your take on where the two of them are at this point?
I don't know. It's tough. It's really tough, especially because like I very much have independent friendships with both of them. Like obviously Vishal is my childhood best friend. And I've known him for so many years, you know, decades. But Rich is also a very special person in my life. You know, when I was in Miami, I had done my first year of law school at the University of Miami. She was the first person that I actually like spoke to in my class and got really close to, and we spent a lot of time together. Like your first year of law school, you know you have all your classes together, you spend every waking moment on campus because it's so rigorous and it's so challenging, so we spent a lot of time together. So she's also a very dear friend of me, so it sucks to see them, you know, have these ups and downs in their relationship. And I have seen the ups and downs. And when they're up, it's fantastic. And they're you could see their personalities are just like glowing. But when it's down, it's just like it's the opposite spectrum, you know. And I hate that they both have to go to this up and down sort of dynamic, because it's exhausting, right? It's just relationships themselves are emotionally draining, but having it go up and down, it's no fun, right? No one wants to be on a roller coaster. People like to be on a roller coaster for 2 minutes because it's like
right,
exhilarating. But who wants to be on a roller coaster for three years or multiple years? So it sucks. It really does suck to see that like that. But, you know, I do know that they love each other, you know, and I hope they do because I introduced them to each other.
Well, you're invested in it. You're invested in both of them as individuals and as a couple.
I need to close on this deal.
I don't get
my commission otherwise.
Well, I mean, do you think that she and her mom are too hard on him, or does Vishal really need to step his game up?
And, you know, that's a tough question. Because I've seen Vishal grow so much as a person when he met Richa. And I'll be honest with you, I've known the kid forever. And before Richa, like, he was a little helpless, you know, just kind of floating around, didn't take much initiative. And I think after he met Richa, you know, and after they started dating, he grew up a lot, you know, and she really did some really great things for him. But at the same time, I do think that, you know, sometimes maybe, you know, Richa, maybe her mom can be a little hard on him and can be a little demanding when he's trying. He really is. Like he balances a lot, right? You know, working with his mom, having a group of friends, being in a relationship. I guess we all do that, right? You know, so he is balancing a lot. But I think both parties have their strengths and weaknesses, right? And both parties need to sort of meet in the middle, because it can't be like extreme on either side. Like it's not 100% Vishal's at fault, or it's not 100% Richa and her mom are at fault. I think it's like a combination of everything.
Right. I think that's fair. I just, as a viewer and a fan, I have a soft spot for Vishal. And sometimes when I see the way that she or her mom speak to him, I'm just kind of like, oh, give him a break. But maybe that's part of the problem, is that he has been given the break for so long, you know, that they're expecting him to deliver a little bit more as a, you know, a partner to her.
Yeah. And I mean, and viewers will see it, you know, viewers will see that Vishal is making tremendous growth. Like even season one, he wasn't as able to convey his thoughts into words. And people saw that in season one, you know, he was very much preferred to just swipe things, you know, put things under the rug or and not actually like talk about things out loud.
Yeah.
And we see it in this season so far, you know, in the first few episodes, he's talking, he's expressing how he feels. He's taking accountability for things. He's offering suggestions. He's saying what he wants to happen. Like all of this, it's good. You know, it's really good. And I see it myself, you know, when we were growing up and throughout our childhood and our teenage years and young adult years, sometimes Vishal would have a little trouble like expressing how he was feeling, using words to describe how he was feeling. And I think he's made tremendous growth.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see how the rest of the season plays out, because we left on such a high note at the end of season one between the two of them. It was all happy and engaged and, oh, things are looking up. And now we came into season two and it's pretty rocky. So I'm excited to see how the rest of it plays out.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the drama between Dylan and Vishal, but specifically, what did you think about the aunties discussing the topic and then Reshma leaving the party last week?
I think Auntie Reshma did the right thing. I think she was in an uncomfortable situation. You know, I think the aunties were gossiping about something that the kids could just resolve on their own and were trying to resolve on their own, right? I mean, at basketball, personally, I thought everything was resolved at basketball, but it came up again as people saw at Brian's birthday party. And then for it to come up again and again and again, it was almost like beating a dead horse. And then the parent, the moms get involved, and like no mom wants to sit in a circle of friends and hear the stuff that's been, you know, said about their son. No mom wants to hear that.
Yeah.
And you reach a point in your life, you know, when you're like, you know, you're in your teenage years, in high school, even in college, you kind of just like put up with situations just for the sake of the group.
Yep.
You know, and you're just young and your tolerance is way lower, so you're just like, oh, let me just put a smile on my face and put up with it. And then as you get older, and you know, I'm in my 30s, but you can imagine our moms, like they're like, no, their tolerance level is not there anymore. If they're uncomfortable, get up and leave, get yourself out of that situation. I think she did that, and I think she did that in a really dignified way without, like she said, saying something that she would regret. So I don't think it was necessary for that conversation to come up, but if it did come up, I think what she did was the right thing to do. Just get up and remove yourself from the situation.
Yeah, I agree. I don't blame her for one second. And I think also we're seeing so much more of the aunties this season. And I think maybe being in that situation with that conversation, cameras are in your face, producers are there. I'm sure she was a little overwhelmed too and didn't want to get stuck in a position where she'd say something that maybe later on she would regret.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think she's also reaching a tipping point, because you know, you saw in season one with, like, you know, Auntie Lopo was saying some not nice things about Vishal, and now again we're back at it, but it's someone else saying some not nice things about Vishal. So how many people, you know, are going to continue saying not nice things about Vishal just because he's very, like, he goes with the flow, and just because he's a very passive person and he's not confrontational doesn't give people a right and, you know, a free card to just say not nice things about him. It doesn't. That's not how life works.
Yeah. It was also a little sneaky housewives move, I think, inviting Lopa and not telling Reshma she's going to be there. I mean, I liked it because it was, you know, little housewives, but I was like, oh, okay, I see you. Yeah, I see what's going on here.
Yeah, I think Auntie Kalpana's, I think her intentions were good, because I think, you know, just she wanted to make Auntie Lopa feel included, especially now that Auntie Lopa has bought a condo. But maybe the way she went about doing it wasn't like the best way. Maybe she should have first texted Auntie Reshma, had a conversation and say, listen, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? I know Auntie Reshma would have not said no, because
yeah,
she's very much a person. I know for a fact Auntie Reshma is come one, come all. The more the merrier. And she's always been like that, and it's always been her personality. So I know she wouldn't have said no, but maybe like a heads up before extending the invite would have been the better way to do it.
Right. Just a little heads up. Just a little one.
Yeah. Exactly.
In this latest episode too, we see that Anisha is... she's listing off what she's looking for in a man. We see her going on a Zoom date, but if you could set her up with another Bravo celebrity, who would it be?
Oh, okay. All right. Listening to all of her qualifications, I think Nima would be really good for her. I think that he's tall. You know, he's handsome. I don't know if he has a beard, but sometimes he lets his facial hair grow out a little bit. He seems like very outgoing. He seems like he has a very fun personality. I don't know. I think they would be a cute couple.
I actually love that. I mean, my mind immediately goes to the Southern Charm guys. I mean, they're all over the place. And I feel like Anisha would never be able to deal with any of them. But maybe like a one-night stand with like a Craig or an Austin would be good for her. But I love Nima. I think that's actually a great choice.
Oh, I think, you know, listen, Eric, I'm all about that. One-night stand with all those guys. They're all so
handsome. Right.
But if we're talking about relationship, I think Nima might be her superhero.
Oh my God. Okay, we're putting that out there. I have an in with MJ. She and I like DM all the time. She's guest co-hosted on the show. So I'm just going to like drop that to her and just see what she thinks.
Yes. Perfect. The Shahs and the Indian, the Persians and the Indians.
Right. Crossover. We need it. So also this season, we have a new Monica. We have OG Monica and we have new Monica. Who would you choose for Brian to end up with long term?
This is putting me on the spot. I don't know. You know what? Me personally, my view on like love and relationships, you know, I would always talk to people and say, okay, you know, I feel like love either happens two ways. Either a love develops from a really close friendship or a love happens with a stranger. Mm-hmm. And for me, my love always was the former. It was the love that had grown and transitioned from a friendship, because you're closest to your friends, right? And that bond is already there. That foundation is already there. And then like the love that grows out of that could be something really magical and amazing.
Yeah.
But a lot of people think it's the other, you know, a lot of people think it has to be the love at first sight with a stranger. And that's the type of love. So just based on my history, you know, and my views, I gotta say Vaswani, because again, it's your childhood friend. Like, that's, who doesn't want to see a love story like that?
I know, it's so true. I mean, last season I was so rooting for them and really wanted things to work out, but it just seemed like maybe it wasn't the right time. There was something that wasn't clicking, and that's okay. Yeah. I love new Monica. I think she's so fantastic. And I love that she and Monica have a relationship already. And I love Brian and OG Monica's friendship, but there is a part of me that is just like, yeah, I want that. They've known each other for so long. Everybody kind of wants it to happen. Like, I would just love to see the two of them, maybe not tomorrow or whatever, but ultimately down the line end up together. Yeah.
Ultimately. Yeah. Cause there's so, I mean, time, and I posted this on my Instagram story a couple days ago, maybe last week. I said in life, timing is everything. And mm-hmm. I firmly believe that everything is timing. If it comes to relationships or friendships or job opportunities or anything, it's all timing. So
yeah,
just maybe the timing's not right, but maybe it could be right in a year, 2 years, 3 years. Then maybe it'll never be right. And maybe not in this lifetime. I don't know.
Right. Maybe like season three, season four, like, I don't know. We'll see. Well, obviously it's Pride Month, and we know that coming out to your grandmother is coming up soon on the show. So can you talk a little bit about your mindset going into that conversation?
I think my mindset going into the conversation was, it's time. I think I had reached a point where I just mm-hmm. didn't want to lie to her anymore. I have so much love for her, and I have so much respect for her, because putting aside that she's like the matriarch of the family, you know, putting aside that she has raised, not only she raised four of her own kids, but she raised, you know, six grandchildren, you know, she has just done so much that I just felt like such a douchebag for just constantly keeping her in the dark.
Right.
And I didn't want to do that anymore. And I wanted to show her that, like, this is how much you mean to me. I want to be honest about who I am. So I'm hoping that, you know, the outcome will be positive, but I don't know. I really don't, because she doesn't understand what it would even, like, she wouldn't understand what gay means. You know, I don't even know what Hindi word to use for gay, because, you know, her English is not amazing. So I don't know how to put it into words. There's just so much. Like, you could probably sense it right now in my voice that I just don't know how to do it. I'm confident that this is the right decision. I just don't know how to do it. And I don't know how she's going to react.
Right, right. Well, and the whole thing sets you free in a sense, you know, because it is something that is on your mind, has been on your mind, you've been holding in, you know, you are internalizing it in so many ways. And once you put that out there, you're kind of free from that.
Yeah, that's right. That's completely right, because she's the last person. And after her,
yeah.
I'm done. I am done. I retire from coming out. I have done it. There's no more coming out from me. I will get a tattoo on my forehead that says I'm gay. Because that really
a big
is.
Big pride flag.
Yeah, exactly. She's the last one, you know, everyone. And then after that, hopefully I'm like liberated from all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know so many people, you and I are the same age, but I know so many people younger than us. The mentality nowadays is a little more of like, we shouldn't have to come out. We should all just kind of be who we are and be accepted for that, you know? And it's just such a different journey than I think you've taken, than I've personally taken in our lives. But I do love how that shift is starting to happen with younger generations.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
Even seeing the conversation between the aunties, not in this most recent episode, but maybe the one before or after, with listening to them talk about, you know, their kids and their experiences and how different things are. It was such a productive conversation. And I was so proud of, you know, the cast and Bravo airing that, because it is so important to see that conversation between parents, and knowing that other parents who are watching who have gay children can kind of see that and relate to it. I just love that moment.
For sure. I mean, especially Indian parents, you know, because it's still not as, you know, it's still not as prevalent in the Indian community, just because I don't know whether it has to be because people are scared to come out. So I agree with you. I'm hoping like other Indian parents, other, you know, Indian kids, adults are able to see these conversations take place and say, okay, I could do it. You know, I have the courage to do it.
Yes, 100%. Well, I want to end on a game of family karma cast superlatives. So yes, I'm going to give you a couple categories and you have to tell me who fits each one the best. So let's start with best dressed.
Best dressed. I mean, it has to be Bali. There's no competition.
Right?
That girl, I'm just like, I've never seen you repeat an outfit once. How do you do it? This is sorcery. How big is your closet?
Also, if you didn't answer her, she would probably come after you. So good job.
Exactly.
Who is the worst driver?
Who's the worst driver? I think Vishal might be the worst driver, only because I know that he's always doing like a million things at once. So whether it's like on a work call or doing this or talking to his mom, I feel like he's always distracted with something on his mind.
Right.
So I might have to say him. And I spent the most time in the car with him, I think, than any of the other cast members. So.
True. So you've just been subjected to his driving too much.
Exactly.
Who is the biggest flirt?
Oh, it's Brian. I mean, that's a no-brainer. Yeah. It's Brian.
Period.
It's Brian. He loves the game.
I mean, I like to think that he flirts with me through the TV screen, but you know, that's just me.
Exactly. My head is flirting with me, but he's not flirting with me at all.
Who is the most athletic?
Okay. It's, well, I guess we saw from the basketball game. None of us.
Right, true.
Oh, actually, you know what? I'm going to go with my dad. My dad is the most athletic. He plays tennis 4 hours twice a week.
Oh, my God.
Which is incredible. I mean, he will go Wednesday evenings and Sunday mornings, and he'll play 3 or 4 hours of tennis. And it's insane. It's insane. That's putting aside his daily yoga.
Wow.
So yeah, I got to say my dad, the rest of the cast kind of sucks it.
Yeah, he wins. He gets the medal for that one for sure. 4 hours of tennis. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Who is the shadiest?
Ooh, this is a fun one. I mean, there's no right answer to this question.
Right. There might be multiple right answers to this one.
And I can't plead the fifth.
You can plead the fifth for sure. I mean, maybe by the end of the season, a few more confessional moments, you might have an answer for it by then.
let me plead the fifth for now.
Fair enough. Last one. Who is the most changed since last season?
This is a good one. You know, I've got to give, you know, obviously I talked about Vishal already, so I won't choose him because we already went through him, but I got to give Anisha credit. I think Anisha, you know, season one was very recent after her breakup, and that was a very long relationship. It was almost a marriage in terms of the duration.
Yeah.
And I remember having multiple conversations with her being like, you know, you got to get out there. Go on dates. Have one night stands. Like, just have fun. But I don't think she was in the right mindset for it. And I wasn't understanding that she was not in the right mindset for it. But seeing her now, like seeing her put herself out there and actually like ready to move on. It's not easy to move on. What do people say? People say it takes like the amount of time you were with someone, it takes that same amount of time to move on. Totally. Yeah. Right. So it takes, in a 9-year, 10-year relationship, it takes a long time. And I'm happy to see that she's kind of somewhat in that place where she's ready to move on and she's ready to start meeting other guys. So kudos for her. Anisha and I have had our ups and downs, obviously. But I got to give credit where credit is due. So kudos for her for being ready to move on.
Definitely. And let's talk about the glow up too, because she came back looking good season two.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, she's killing the glow up game. That's for sure.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today. This has been so much fun. I can't wait to see the rest of the season.
Awesome. Thanks, Eric. It's going to be a good one. So keep staying tuned.
All right. Thanks, Emery. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Eric. Have a good one.
Beverly Hills?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I'm going to start by saying that I personally loved Dorit's take on patriotic look.
What do you think her interpretation represented?
I think it was Cher in Clueless giving the speech about, you know, and it does not say RSVP on the Statue of Liberty.
I think you're right.
And I think that is the epitome of America. Call me crazy.
Right. And also the green money, greed. America's kind of greedy.
And she had her vote little hair clips
She did.
I think Rinna had one too, which was nice. And honestly, I did love Dorit's look.
It's fun when people get to interpret things in different ways. And I wish Dorit got a chance to explain it because I do wonder if it was Clueless related.
Right.
I could see that being a thing.
Totally. Even if she didn't outwardly know that's what she was channeling. It's what she was channeling.
Right. I want to go back to the top of the episode, flashback anyway. The conversation between Dorit and Crystal that Kyle
interrupted.
What was it about?
Am I an important friend to you?
Yes.
Do you want to make this effort with me? Like, do you want to invest in our friendship like this?
I think I have.
Then don't ever talk to me like that again.
It was probably about the Sutton stuff, don't you think?
I would assume so, but they seemed to be a little dodgy about the actual topic, or they didn't really dive into what it was that they were discussing. So I would assume, Sutton, but was there more to it?
Yeah.
I don't know. And especially seeing the conversation between Kyle and Dorit, which I'm very curious your take, because I know how you feel about Dorit. Very protective of her. Kyle seems to be feeling herself a little bit in this conversation. And granted, like we said at the beginning of the season, she is the queen of Beverly Hills at this point, almost by default.
Yeah.
Right? But it seems like she's feeling herself a little bit. And in the conversation with Dorit, when she's like, you're never going to speak to me that way again.
Yeah. If you want to be friends, don't ever talk to me like that again.
Yeah, that seemed a little, I don't know, heavy-handed for her.
I mean, okay, on one hand, I do think it's important in all relationships to set boundaries and to say, like, you can't hurt the ones you love the most. You know, you can't be mean to me in a way that you wouldn't be mean to someone else. I get that. But Kyle doesn't seem to understand that she is also playing a part in this dynamic.
Right.
She interrupts Dorit in a way I don't think she interrupts the other girls. It is odd, this friendship. It does feel, frenemy is too strong of a word, because I think frenemy, there are malicious feelings usually bubbling under the surface. With them, I don't think it's that, but they just can't stop snipping at each other.
Right. It's kind of sisterly, I guess.
Yes.
Right? And maybe that's happened because we don't really see that relationship with Kyle and Kathy. So maybe the way Kathy treats Kyle, Kyle treats Dorit.
Yeah.
Almost like the big sister type of dynamic.
Yeah.
Okay, one thing that I thought was really funny about this party was watching the Beverly Hills house husbands.
Yes.
And how different it is from Jersey. Like, they need some lessons from the Jersey house husbands.
But it was funny because we never get to see them give their take on the drama with each other. Like, of course, Mauricio has in the past sort of talked to Kyle about his opinions on things, but it's never just been the guys talking about a drama with the girls and, like, giving their take on it.
Right, right. Yeah, and there's also not as many house husbands, you know, in this scene as there could be. It would be nice to maybe throw a little Harry Hamlin in there, or I guess that's the only other person we could really throw in the mix, right? Everyone else is a single gal. Well, Erica, newly single.
Well, okay, so that was interesting, the Erica stuff, because Kyle saying that she thought it was odd Erica didn't open up to any of the ladies about it, and she's like, if I was going through a divorce, I would have. And I am not so sure that that's true, because even if she meant to say, why didn't Erica tell us off camera? That's an extra layer of trust to tell your co-star on a reality show a deep secret and pray that they don't repeat it on camera.
Yeah.
Like, I do not think that, I don't blame Erica for not sharing that. That's a deeply personal thing.
Right. And it does reiterate that wall that Erica has up. And I don't know if I were Erica, if I would have talked about it either. The only thing that is a bit of a red flag, which I'm sure will get addressed later on in the season, is the timing right. of the filing of divorce. So was it more of a calculated move, or was it just the breaking point in their marriage? We don't know yet, and we don't have Erica's side of the story
right.
at this point. I loved the monologue we got at the beginning from her and the foreshadowing to the end of the episode, and then her coming in right at the end and the door shutting and her just like looking at the women.
I did not see it ending this way. I was going to hold that man's hand till he died.
Do you think production gave her a later call time just so she'd be the last one to walk in?
Oh, that's interesting.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know.
I would have if I were the producer that day. I would have been like, Erica, you show up last. We need an entrance from you.
So I know that the ladies touch on the Crystal and Sutton thing in Lake Tahoe.
Yep.
And then, well, Crystal says, you know, the trip is so stressful. I lost 5 pounds. And like, no, that's actually not a good thing because I, you know, have a history with bulimia.
How long have you had this problem?
I became a bulimic when I was 11.
You what?
I was a bulimic when I was 11.
I just want the girls to know how hyper aware I am of my weight and sort of the struggles that I go through.
I will say that, like, it's under control.
Good.
But it's not something that I've ever hidden because it's been so long. Or I'm not suffering on a daily about it.
I was 11 years old when I watched a video in class about eating disorders. And obviously it was a negative message. And then I sort of picked up some tools from it. And that's when it began.
Which brings me into my theory around the whole Sutton Crystal thing.
Okay.
I think the reason it was so upsetting to Crystal, and I don't know if she realizes this, and again, I could just be digging too deep here, but I think that Crystal was in her room, she was in the bathroom, and she was naked. Someone coming in saying, what are you doing? Or like, what's going on? I don't know what's going on in here.
Yep.
Could that bring up feelings of like shame in the bathroom and like what Crystal used to go through?
Wow. Yeah, I think that's really insightful. I mean, definitely her dealing with bulimia, I'm sure her naked body being exposed to someone unexpectedly is also a trigger for her. She's like, no, don't look at me.
And she said to Sutton, you know, when someone drops to the ground,
yeah,
doesn't that say to you, you should leave, you know?
Yeah, it was, I don't think creepy, but it was weird that Sutton, it was like, I'm going to return her coat to her in this very moment. Knock on the door, not even wait for a reply and open it. Crystal could have been doing anything in there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what if she was masturbating? You know what I mean? Like awkward, just like don't, she doesn't need her coat in that moment.
Yeah.
But it's, I think what you're saying is probably a lot to do with it. I think it's very layered.
Yeah.
What Crystal went through in that moment. And I hope that everyone appreciates her honesty and the fact that she's opening up. That's a huge moment for a new housewife to reveal something that big about their life.
Yeah, because even Crystal's husband was like, I can't believe you shared that. And that they had not even had a lot of conversations about it.
Right.
Gosh, you know, it is so scary to me, though, because Lisa Rinna said that, thinks that Amelia's started when she had to write a paper on eating disorders in school.
Yeah.
And then Crystal said that hers started after watching an educational video about eating disorders.
Right.
How scary. I immediately Googled how to prevent your child, you know, like what are things as a parent you can do? Because I'm just so curious now.
Yeah, I know.
That is terrifying that something you're trying to help someone and it ends up being the catalyst for an awful, awful thing.
Right. Well, that's the thing. You want to expose your kids to something, educate them about it, and hope that they make the right decision, right? But exposing them to something gives them access to an idea or whatever that they didn't have before. And it could very easily go in the wrong direction. And that sounds like it's what happened with Crystal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I remember being in elementary school and for the first time being in the DARE program and being exposed to what drugs were. Before that, maybe I had heard about it in movies, but didn't quite get it. I mean, luckily I didn't. I smoke weed, but like, that's about it. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. It is just interesting to think about how being exposed to something and educated about it can go in the wrong direction. And I feel bad that Crystal didn't get an opportunity to share it with her parents. And she still hasn't had an opportunity to talk to her parents about it. Cause maybe something could have been done sooner. At 11. Yeah. That's a lot to go through at such a young age.
Yeah.
Oh, can we talk about Crystal's $95,000 bag?
Isn't that just ridiculous?
I mean, it's very small for that much money. I do think it was very pretty.
Yeah, of course.
But it's not very, I don't know, economical.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, I guess if you have the money to spend.
Where do you take that bag to?
A Parisian party.
That's true.
Okay. What do you think about the fact that Garcelle basically insinuated Erica should have just waited for Tom to die before filing for divorce?
Shouldn't she wait?
For what?
For what?
I know what you're thinking. I literally know what you're thinking.
Can you guys fill us in for those who don't know? What were you gonna say?
I don't know. I just feel like they've been married that long. Like,
oh, wait.
But as Harry says,
stop it, Garcelle. I didn't say it.
I think Garcelle was asking what all of us were thinking when we heard the news. That was one of the first things I thought.
Was it?
Yes. I don't know if I said it out loud. I might have in the privacy of my own home to just Danny, because he probably thought the same exact thing, to be honest. But I was surprised how long it took the rest of the women to come around to what Garcelle was saying. Because I thought it was pretty clear, but maybe that's just because I had also thought it. But, you know, who says it? Sutton, she's right. I mean, he could live another 20 years.
True.
So waiting around is not... Right. Necessarily an option, especially once we find out what caused this divorce. You know, if Erica can explain more, waiting around 20 more years might not have been an option for her.
Right.
Did you love Kyle referencing season one, Kim, you stole my goddamn house?
Not only did we steal each other's liquid, Sutton stole my goddamn house.
That's so funny.
I was like, I'm so glad the editors included that. Such a great moment. Just a little. It wasn't breaking the fourth wall. It was just like knocking on it.
Right. It's like, hey, I see you.
Peeping through the window. Like, Have you watched ahead on Beverly Hills?
Oh, yeah.
What can you tease about next week's episode?
Well, I will say there is no next on this episode.
Right.
But we have it on BravoTV.com exclusively.
Okay, I'm going to check that out.
Yeah. No, Erica talks about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I am continually shocked at how much she's sharing.
Yeah.
So.
She seemed very nervous going into this party. Yeah, I will say that much.
I mean, I can't imagine.
I don't think she's used to all eyes being on her to this degree.
Right.
You know? New York?
Yes.
Looking at our notes, we both have the same question for each other. And that is, what would your pageant talent be?
So I used to go to like these competitions. What were they even? I
some
don't,
kind of Christian Texas thing. What are you talking about?
Christian, but it was Texas. And it was like different. It was acting theater competitions. And one of the categories that I entered was lip syncing.
Oh, okay.
And I always did it with a group or the Spice Girls, and I was Posh.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you said that, because you know what I was going to answer?
What?
I know the choreography to Who Do You Think You Are by the Spice Girls, and that would 100% be my pageant talent, because I don't have any other talents.
I think that you and I are kindred spirits.
Absolutely.
And this is proof.
It was just the 25th anniversary of Wannabe, which is wild to think about. But I mean, what did we do? What did the world do before the Spice Girls?
Nothing.
It didn't exist. It
didn't.
Okay, so the pageant thing was like pretty fun. I'm glad Leah came around. They all had a really good time. Who would you have crowned the winner?
Ramona.
I would have too.
Just, she was so funny about her talent.
Yeah.
Okay. It's on the show, like, why my arms are so good.
But I did love that Luann was like, oh, that's so sweet. Leah thinks that she genuinely won. She's like, I rigged it.
She had to. Leah needed a win. She needed a win. So the next day, the conversation at breakfast I thought was really interesting. First, we had Ebony talking about this sister who has reached out to her and believes that they're related and wants to establish a relationship with her, which is a lot to deal with. Number one.
There is a young woman. Her name is Ashley. Mm-hmm. And she reached out to me on Instagram about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And she proclaims to be my sister. She proclaims to be my father's daughter.
Who your father you don't know, though.
My father that I don't know.
It's perfect.
This is where this is really sticky. My mother spoke about this man named Kenneth, who could potentially be my dad. But she always was very honest and transparent about the fact that there's no concrete answers. And to be candid, you know, it's not really something she's comfortable exploring. So I called her and I said, Ashley, tell me why you think I'm your sister. Let's start there.
Right.
She says that my picture was on her grandmother's mantle her entire childhood and life, and still is. And that her father and family always told her she had an older sister. And I want to go on this journey to find out if it's true.
Right.
This is exciting.
And then number two, we get an apology from Heather to Ebony about the
articulate thing.
Yeah, microaggression that we saw, which I am so curious if Heather went back and reflected on that and realized it on her own.
My theory is that whenever she said the thing about, I can't believe Leah's not voting to Ebony, Ebony might have said something to her.
Oh, maybe.
But good on Heather for owning it publicly that she did that.
I made a mistake and I wanted to apologize because I hope that you knew that the intent was...
I didn't think it was malicious. And I, of course, accept your apology. You said you're very articulate. Now, that's a trigger for me because the subtext of that is that Black people in this country are not expected to speak the King's English properly.
Just like Ramona. It was a giveaway. I had to do it.
I'm not fragile in that way. So we'll have these uncomfortable moments. And you can always ask the question. Right. And, you know, I don't have all the answers either. I want to be clear about that.
Right.
I think she means it.
I do too. And I think she's been getting a lot of shit in the last couple of episodes. And I think she's been going off a lot on social media and continuing to perpetuate the Leah stuff. And I think Leah might be feeling a type of way about it. And it's like, okay, let's be done with this. But I think at the end of the day, Heather seems to be on the right side of everything. Right. She just isn't going about it in the best way possible. But we'll give it to her.
Okay. One of the most Ramona moments I've ever seen in my life happens later in this episode. Well, first of all, we get a good one where she's voice memoing an apology to Leah. I am so sorry. Yeah, it's just funny to me whenever people send those.
It's so weird.
But then Ramona's trying to get her real estate license and, you know, she's having this conversation and they're talking about, you know, a lot's changed in real estate and we now have to be super mindful of like the terms we use. We can no longer say, you know, master bedroom. We can no longer say his and her bathroom and we can no longer say steps to the park. And Ramona goes, right, because of the invalids.
If it's right off Fifth, I don't think you can say steps to the park.
Because someone told me that because of invalids.
I don't.
Handicapped people.
Right, if you're in a wheelchair, stepping to the park.
Someone just told me that recently.
Right.
I did a spit take on that
It was so funny. Like, it's terrible, but it's funny. Because it's funny because Ramona, I think, really does want to learn.
Yeah.
She wants to do well. She wants to be better. But she's still Ramona.
She's still Ramona. She's still, and honestly, that conversation educated me too. Like, not that I'm in real estate and need to worry about these terms, but the steps to the park, the
his and her. I heard steps to the park.
Yeah, all of that stuff is good to know, I think, for all of us. But it's interesting with Ramona, and she does seem like her head's about to pop off with all this new information that she's trying to process, right? She's very overwhelmed by it, but it does seem like she's putting in a conscious effort. What comes up by the end of the episode with Sonia and everything is what Ramona doing performative? Is it that she is now posting pictures of like me and Ebony, me and Bershawn, look at me, I like Black people, you know, they're sort of hinting at whether it's genuine or not. And I kind of felt bad for Ramona in some ways because I do think she's trying.
Yeah.
I think she thinks she's trying maybe more than she actually is, but she's trying.
Right.
So we should give her a little bit of credit.
And I will say, not that performative activism is good at all. No, it's not. But I think she's trying.
I think the question for me is Ramona trying to rebrand? Is she trying to present herself in a new light as a more educated, worldly person?
You're right.
You know, and I think maybe she is. And part of the Instagram posts and all of that are a part of that rebrand. But again, at least she's trying.
Yeah.
At least she's putting in that effort and she's listening to Ebony. And she did try to shut down Heather a few times. You know, she's like, don't preach to me now. And it's like, well, no, that, just listen to what Heather has to say. Just listen to what people have to say. Yeah. That's sort of the whole point, is just listen to what other people have to say and then respond.
The one part that I just found very icky was Ramona not showing up to the election party, which, you know, fine. But to say it's because, well, the state of the world right now and I'm worried about looters. It's like, it just rubs me so the wrong way.
Yeah, nobody is trying to loot you on your 60th floor apartment, dorm and building. Come on, you know?
It's just, yeah.
I will say, Election Day in New York City, it was a thought that crossed my mind too. Like, what's going to happen? I wasn't afraid. I didn't flee the city. But I did have the thought of, either way, what could happen? Because I think we all just... we're kind of waiting for something in some ways. But that being said, we all knew that there wasn't going to be a call that night anyway. So it would have been days before there would have been results regardless. But yeah, it did look a little weird for Ramona to have left the city, to not go to this election party. I mean, the whole thing just makes me so curious. I just would love to know who everyone voted for.
Yeah.
Especially because we saw them go to the booths at the beginning of the episode. And I was just like, oh, if I could just get a glimpse at the ballot, just be a fly on the inside of that little thing you stand in. My favorite part of this episode was Sonia in the boxing ring with Marty releasing that aggression.
Yes.
I want Sonia to beat the shit out of me so bad. I want that to be a BravoCon event.
That's a good one.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Get knocked out by Sonia.
And Marty could be there, too. He's been a character on the show now for, two seasons. So let's bring him. Let's bring Tinsdale. Let's bring Sonia and Leah. And they can just beat me up.
Here's the thing. Sonia, you just root for her so much. I want her to stay in that space. I don't like what we saw at the end of the episode with the drunkenness. And again, I just don't think, I think she just doesn't react well to alcohol. I think she's allergic to it or something. Just stop drinking. Because then it's harder to root for her.
Did she show up already a little tips? Is that what we're assuming?
I don't know. I didn't think so, but I don't know.
She got lit pretty quickly. It seemed like nobody else was on her level.
But that's what everyone else's point is. It's like, how does it happen so fast?
Yeah.
And she said it's because of the water pills she takes.
Right.
And it's like, then don't drink.
Well, it's also going to continue to put a wedge between her and Luann. If Luann has to bail out every time Sonia gets that turned up, then Sonia needs to recognize that and maybe curb that behavior a little bit.
Right.
Well, I'm excited for next week. We get Bershawn, who we knew was going to be joining the cast as a friend of couple months back, I mean, before the season premiered. I didn't expect her to come in through Ramona.
Yeah.
I will say that much. Rose and Thorn?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
What was your rose?
My rose was from Shaws of Sunset, and it's when they do a super cut of all of the times MJ has worn a leopard bodysuit, which is way more than you would think.
Yeah.
And Mike being like, well, was it this one? He's like, no, it's a different one. This one? No, a different one. It's just...
I'm impressed he remembered them all.
I know.
She looked great.
What was your rose?
My rose is that next week, Below Deck Sailing Yacht Reunion, we will finally get the answer we've all been waiting for. Is JL the father of Danny's baby?
Tonight, the Below Deck Sailing Yacht Reunion goes full tilt. Gary, do you think you were a twat to all the women on the boat?
You clearly also hated me and thought that I was a giant bitch.
Don't put words in my mouth, Daisy. One thing I can elaborate on.
Never told you this.
And a Parsifal 3 way boatmans. Why don't you think you broke girl code?
Why didn't we ask Sydney? I told my phone wouldn't get emotional.
He thinks it's not his child, and he doesn't want it to have anything to do with it.
My heart breaks for Danny.
Danny, everybody wants to know, is JL the father of your baby?
Well, let's put it this way.
Jean-Luc couldn't join us, so we tracked him down. What do you say to that?
Oh, man, you're going to make me do this now, aren't you?
Hopefully next week. Is it a two-part reunion?
Yeah.
It's two-part?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, so we'll have to wait till the following week, probably. But it's still my rose that we're going to get an answer because the super tease, the trailer looks really good.
Right.
What was your thorn?
So my thorn is from Below Deck Sailing Yacht. And, you know, the episode sort of ends, but then there's a crossing. And so you get like a little mini taste of basically almost a next season. I mean, that's right. Not what it is, but it felt like it. And Gary and Sydney decide to room together.
A recipe
what
for disaster.
Is wrong? I mean, you find out that changed and it went back and forth. But still, like, just what are you guys again.
I don't know. I do not ship that relationship.
Right.
Okay.
What's your thorn?
My thorn was the 9-hour RV ride that they took on Married to Medicine to Jekyll Island. Like, this would be the time that you got to call up Kenya and ask for a private jet. You know
right
what I mean? Like,
right,
9 hours in an RV. And it was Lisa Nicole's RV, and Dr. Jackie had to get out and pump gas. So, you know, the whole thing was just too much. They didn't
right
get there till 4 a.m.
Ugh.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. We will be back with an all new episode next week.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9.
And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys at the table getting tipsy, miss me, kiss.